maybe a Blackstone, grab a buddy, grab a beverage. It's the morning tailgate, Raider Nation Radio on a Friday. Boy, are we excited to get to this weekend and see what the reaction is going to look like for the Silver and Black. I know I am. I'm pumped up. I have had enough of the dreary, of the heavy sighs, of the eye rolling that we've heard. Seen? We've definitely seen it through the audio waves here on Raider Nation Radio, through all the calls of the nation, the tailgaters, from week three. But we are on to week four now, officially, as Thursday Night Football kicked off last night. I am excited. I feel rejuvenated. I feel a little refreshed heading into the weekend. A lot of talk about Las Vegas, the Raiders, UNLV. I'm excited to see what this weekend has in store. We got Chris Thomas, Super Bowl champion, 9 o'clock hour, Fusion Odyssey. You know who else we got?
Who?
We got the moneymaker.
Uh-oh.
We got the moneymaker, Tim Murray, VSiN, host extraordinaire.
For shizzle.
Betting aficionado. He's going to tell us how to make some money this weekend, what needs to go right, and what is catching his eye not only on Saturdays but Sundays as well. We're going to hear from Gardner Minshew later in the hour. We're going to hear from Antonio Pierce, I'm sure, at some point. Maybe a couple of the coordinators as they spoke yesterday. And Davante Adams, who, and I guess let's start right there.
Well, that's a little outdated, what he said on Wednesday. And that's why I just don't share your... I don't know what it is that you're expressing.
You have no
about
excitement.
Sunday. No, it's not excitement. It's definitely trepidation when Davante Adams shows up on the injury report, as he did yesterday, with a hamstring injury. Something happened in practice because we saw him before, you know, during the our time out on the field, and he looked completely fine, only to come to find out about an hour and a half later. Something happened during practice, and now he's dealing with the hamstring injury. Don't know what the extent of it is. We'll try to get an update. Antonio Pierce is talking at 11:30 today. Max Crosby kind of sounded dubious on whether or not he's going to play on Sunday. So there definitely wasn't a whole lot of "I'll be out there" type talk. So we'll see where that goes. Michael Mayer shows up on the injury report yesterday. Did not practice yesterday for personal reasons. I just wrote a story. They may be starting two rookie offensive linemen on the offensive line. They're down Divine Diablo. They're down Malcolm Kuntz, Marcus Epps, Isaiah Palamau, who I think we all have high hopes for. He's going to be the starting safety. So this is a little bit of a danger zone, I think, for the Raiders going into Sunday, which is why there's a little bit of trepidation on my part on what actually is going to happen on Sunday. They got they're behind an eight ball a little bit right now, and it's too early to say a must win situation, but boy, I'll tell you what, getting to 2-2 would be hugely to me at this point a pretty big achievement for the Raiders.
Never ideal coming out of a Thursday when you see three guys pop up on that injury report. Michael Mayer, as you mentioned, personal reasons. Davante Adams limited due to a hamstring. And then Kenai Maga with a calf injury. Special team war daddy.
An ace.
Yeah, that big man can run too.
So that's not obviously ideal. Christian Wilkins, full participant. Tyree Wilson, a full participant. We heard from him as well yesterday in and amongst the media scrums. Colton Miller seems to be a full participant to go, even though he's still on that report. Thayer Munford Jr., a DNP for the second straight day.
That doesn't
look
good.
Looking more and more likely DJ Glaze is going to get a full plate.
Which is interesting because Antonio Pierce said that they were itching to get him on the field regardless of what happened. You know, the injury to Thayer Munford on Sunday against the Carolina Panthers. But it sounded like from Antonio Pierce that DJ Glaze was pushing in the right direction. Like, we got to get this guy on the field. Now, it worked out, unfortunately, for Thayer Munford. DJ Glaze goes in the third play of the game when Thayer goes down. So, you know, for that reason, he was out on the field. But it sure sounded like he was earning a right to get out there on the field regardless, which is good news, obviously, for the young tackle from Maryland. But, you know, whenever you're talking about an injury along the offensive line, that just means your pecking order, your depth chart is strained that much more. We'll see if they bring somebody up from the practice squad at tackle. I would imagine a Wagner, you know, the young kid from Arkansas, right? Might be somebody that's up if they can't go, but they're already straining on their depth chart, whether you're talking about the offensive line or the defensive line. At linebacker, thankfully for them, they had, what, 7 linebackers that they had on the 53-man roster, but they're straining at various positions, which for a team that's 1-2 and facing kind of a must-win situation on Sunday against the Browns, they're going to have to dig pretty deep.
What's interesting is if we talked a week ago and we heard Antonio Pierce say, you know, they wanted to get DJ Glaze in at some point, we would have been like, huh. But then we saw what we saw week 3, right? Mm-hmm. With Jackson Powers Johnson kind of rotating with Dylan Parham, Tony Pierce alluding to, you know, that was kind of the plan. We were going to do that. And then we hear we were going to do that with DJ Glaze at some point. I guess I'm not surprised that based on what we saw in week 3, I guess that makes sense now. It feels like there's this behind the scenes, I think, like arch villainous plan, but there's no villains here, but just a bigger plan when it comes to getting those guys in.
Yeah.
Because there's clearly a plan there. We've been sitting here kind of a little bit in the dark, a little bit of confusion as to what that plan is. Shouldn't Jackson Powers be on the left? You know, we're asking those questions, and then to see it kind of happen in the third quarter, more late in the game in week 3, and then to hear him say, you know, he didn't say that was going to be what they did with DJ Glaze and Thayer Munford, but to allude to it,
no,
and now all of a sudden, that's fascinating to me.
Well, there's two things going on. Number one, coaches often talk about players decide playing time. So it was a sign that DJ Glaze was pushing the envelope in practice and kind of, I need to be out on the field. Through his work in the classroom and on the field, He was pushing the envelope, like I said, and making a compelling case to be out there on the field. And it felt like, or sounds like anyway, the coaches were in agreement on that. I've talked to various people in the organization about that whole thing with Jackson Powers Johnson, and I've literally been told don't read anything into that. They like Dylan Parham is somebody that they understand is like you have said, numbers wise, the best offensive lineman on the field. So they're extremely high on Dylan Parham. It was more about communication, trying to get the
right.
You know, with Jackson, getting his first taste. There was some thought process behind that had nothing to do with Dylan Parham's performance or Jackson Powers Johnson's a long range position where he's going to settle in. It sounds like left guard is still that plan. So now becomes, all right, is that where we see him on Sunday? Could we even see him in the starting lineup on Sunday as that left guard? Whereas with DJ, you know, it sounded like he might have been in a little bit of a rotation with Thayer Munford, which I don't know what that portends for Thayer Munford, but I know what it portends for DJ Glaze. He's been playing really well and showing them that he deserves to be on the field, which is good news.
First things first, when they said, you know, don't read too much into it, mm-hmm. Did you tell them that does not make for good radio? We need to read into those things. But, no, that's
great.
It's
great to have context, too.
It's great. Yeah. Don't let context get in the way of the facts.
We need open-ended.
Context is a very beautiful thing.
Nothing direct. Open-ended.
There's
is
zero
what we need.
Context on Twitter, by the way.
I think,
that just drives me nuts.
I think we all saw in those, specifically, and again, I go back to this moment during the open practices. I want to say it was the first open practice, Clay, where Thayer got injured.
Yeah.
That was the first day of training camp.
I know he got
eye opener of all eye openers.
But it was the first home mm-hmm. opening night for the fans
during training camp
where that he couldn't go, and then all of a sudden the DJ Glaze conversation started going. Antonio Pierce was like lauding him about how good he's looked. Very next day we saw Thayer back in it. So again, you know, that pushing of competition, I guess it's not surprising to hear when Antonio Pierce says, you know, he's been doing it. And the one thing that I take away from when we talk about DJ Glaze, and we heard from him earlier this week about that time, normally when you hear coaches talk about young players, especially spot duty, right, they're like, yeah, you know, they did well. It was a learning experience. He's going to get better, that kind of thing. We didn't really hear that with DJ. The commonality we heard, not only from the coaches but his teammates, the moment wasn't too big for him.
Well,
he stepped mm-hmm. in, and normally on a rotational basis, you'll sit there and a player will understand, hey, I'm going to be in on a rotation. I'm going to have these allotted plays mm-hmm. that I'm comfortable with, that the coaches know I'm comfortable with, and we're going to go and I'm going to be successful right there and get some confidence. That was not the case with DJ. He was kind of thrown into it, didn't know what was going to happen, and he handled it well by all accounts.
Well, what's so interesting about that is that it's happened at various times now for him. Literally the first day of pads. The first snap, Thayer gets hurt, and all of a sudden, DJ Glaze has to go in there. This is the first day of snaps. You're a rookie player. Your head's probably spinning. There's Max Crosby lined up right in front of you. And I know talking to some people in the organization, they're like, uh-oh. This could look really ugly because we've seen Max just, you know, throw people around like rag dolls. And I'm not saying that Max didn't get his in that sequence, but DJ Glaze also got his, and there was this like, oh wow, within the organization of he's way further along than even we thought at that point. Then you talked about, and he had a couple of really good days after that in practice. All right, that's something to build on for DJ Glaze. And then you just mentioned that open practice. Same exact situation, right? Same exact situation. Now, I don't know if they were in full pads that day, but anyway.
They were not.
He goes in there and handles his business, right?
Were they? No.
I don't think they were.
I don't think they were in the first day.
Could have been.
But you think for game time and, you know, at that moment, the Raiders' line of scrimmage was not being taken by the Raiders. It was getting manhandled. And going up against somebody like Jadeveon Clowney, DJ Glaze held his own. And we've often talked about, like, if we're not mentioning your name, that means you're doing something
right.
Good because nothing bad is happening.
You know, what's interesting about that also, Clay, is that talking to some people, they felt pretty darn good about the pass protection in that game on Sunday. They were like, you know, watching the tape, it was pretty darn good.
I've said it for 3 weeks. The pass protection has not been as bad as people are making the line out to be because of the running game.
Right. That is still obviously a major work in progress, but surprisingly so, I guess, is that through the Raiders' eyes, they're like, it was that part of it was pretty darn good, and DJ Glaze was a major, major part of that. And so I think those experiences that he had this year in training camp, although they were bad situations for Thayer Munford, and you know there were people that in the organization that were bracing themselves for something really ugly because it is a rookie, it is a really good defensive line, and he didn't bat an eye. And so he was prepared in a lot of ways. I know it's a game, completely different situation, but having gone through that previously during training camp set him up as best as possible.
It clearly proved dividends. But we're in a musical chairs type situation now as it comes to the offensive line in terms of the now and in the future of what this looks like. So I'm excited to see what they do. I really am. I'm excited to see what this looks like between the line, the players, Getsy, the assistant coaches, getting them right, who's in. I can't get out of my mind what Lincoln Kennedy said to us yesterday on the show, which was that, you know, when we were talking scheme, zone, power, what, you know, it's a mentality.
And continuity,
but it's in terms of the execution part, just the mentality of beating the man across from you.
Being more physical than the other guy.
And Link is a guy who's played just about every position along the offensive line, along his career, played in a bunch of different schemes and offenses, and has seen everything. And he says for him, it always came down to one thing.
Right.
At the end of the day, are you beating the man across from you? And so he said, until the lot of them, and that goes to the continuity, but until the lot of them get that same mentality and keep that mentality, it's going to be a slow build. But he said the talent is there. The ability to get there, it might take longer than most would have hoped.
Yeah, and you would think what the interesting thing about that is, you would think that the run blocking would be the first part that comes along a little bit quicker because of that whole thing. Just beat your guy, start moving people around. But for whatever reason, you know, that just hasn't been the case for the Raiders. But I do think that like you just mentioned, the mentality, and then getting a solid group of five out there for the rest of the season, or however long you can get that five out there, you know, barring any injuries, to develop that chemistry. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Vince, you've mentioned this. As many times as we've seen some poor execution in terms of the one-on-ones, we've also seen breakdowns in communication. And that really is, that goes to the heart of the continuity and the chemistry and understanding the roles and trusting the other guy, all that good stuff that we talk about, which sounds like cliches, but is especially on the offensive line, because that is the one group that's a group. I mean, you have everybody has to have some connection.
Yeah, but the receivers don't necessarily. I mean, there's communication there. Yeah. I understand, but it's not on the same level as those guys need to be a unit. It's similar, right. Similar in soccer. The back line has those back four have to be in complete unison and on the same wavelength. Otherwise, things get out of sorts. It's interesting because you talk about the miscommunication. And, Clay, I don't recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't recall in week one miscommunication, and maybe I'm sure there was, in terms of the pass protection. Didn't feel like there was miscommunication.
I thought that was the week.
No, Baltimore's week was the miscommunication because that was
there
the
were
first.
A couple with Colton in I'm, the Chargers
I'm
game.
Sure there was.
There was, yeah.
So, but the Baltimore was the one that really stood out for me in terms of, man, they are just not right on the same page. Like week one, I think we all kind of give everyone the benefit of the doubt of being on the wrong page just because it's week one. Everything's
the
new
first
again.
Time
terms
anyone.
Like pad level is brought
just,
up.
Yeah. Colton hadn't been out there. Again, there was just a lot of. So, no, you don't get a pass because the wins loss still count. But it was the week two, the one that kind of stood out to me. There were some glaring miscommunications. Yeah. First play of the game with Colton. 5 sacks, I believe, in that game. I counted 3, and I could even go as far as say as 4 were due to miscommunication because of that. Now, at the same time, just like when my son comes home from school and he's doing a math class, he's got to show his work, right? And he gets the wrong answer. It's like, well, where in that tree of work did you find it? As much as the offensive line is the starting point, If you trickle down and you look at the PFF grades and it goes to the point we're making here in terms of the pass protection is holding up for the most part, not at an elite level, but it's holding
it's
up
enough.
But Gardner Minshew has been graded out as doing his line of disservice in terms of holding on to the ball at the fourth highest most of any quarterback in terms of dangerous holding the ball. So
too long. You're holding on to the ball too long is what they're saying.
So again, we sound like a broken record, but it is a collective. I mean, this team is not at that level enough to where one guy can make up for another because it just becomes a giant snowball effect. So it's interesting. That's why I'm excited. I'm excited to see the response. I'm excited to what I'm done with expectations. I am done saying what is going to happen. I'm going to tell you my feelings as we move into the weekend. That is excitement. 702-365-9200. Just because I don't have expectations or know what's going to happen doesn't mean we don't want to hear from you, the nation, the tailgaters. What do you think is going to happen Sunday at Allegiant Stadium against the Cleveland Browns? What do you expect? What do you, well, I don't think we know what you hope to see, but what do you hope? What are your hopes and dreams and aspirations Sunday at Allegiant?
Just win, baby.
Back here on the Morning Tailgate, Eric Allen, who joins us every Monday morning for our Monday Morning Cornerback. Join us on Mondays for the recap of the game as he was recapping Antonio Pierce's thoughts after the postgame, referring to players making business decisions. We're back here on the Morning Tailgate. We'll take your thoughts up online. Text line and phone numbers, they're open. 702-365-9200. What are some of the things that you're hoping for that you see on Sunday? Because that's what you're clinging to now is hope. And when you come off a week of practice like this and you see an injury report that has, you know, Max Crosby, Davante Adams, and some DMPs throughout the week, yep, it makes you wonder what's the starting lineup going to look like. We'll get your thoughts up online and on the phone, 702-365-9200.
You know, and I think we started with the injury report and Davante Adams kind of popping up. Obviously never ideal late in the week like that to do so. You know, a lot of questions being thrown my way, and I'm sure your guys' way as well, about Max Crosby, what he looks like. He obviously was in a media scrum yesterday. He was asked, I think it was Adam Hill who asked, you know, does he have any fears of not being out there? And he's said, quote, you know, paraphrasing, I'm not worried about that right now. So you could take that two ways. Like, I'm not worried about not being there. Or he's taking it one day at a time, which is what it kind of sounded like. I'm not going to worry about Max not playing until I see him in street clothes on Sunday, just because of all the things we've seen Max play through over the years and how he's been able to get himself ready each and every week. Now, we've also heard Antonio Pierce talk about multiple times now protecting the players from themselves and doing what's right by the players.
Oh, yeah.
But with Max, it kind of feels a little different because he's a tone setter and because he has battled through so much over his career of being able to be available that I'm not going to worry about his availability until I see him on street clothes on Sunday, because I'm not going to hold him. Who am I to say, I don't think he's going to do it when he's proven his entire career he has been able to.
Yeah, even last year before the Jets game, he had a fever. You know, it was like, you know, not only was the knee kind of feeling a little swollen, but there was a fever going on. And, you know, you wonder like, all right, this is probably the game he's not going to make. And then, of course, he makes it. His daughter shows up at the game. He kisses his daughter on the sidelines. And it's back to Max. And he had an awesome game. Again, like another like 95% of all the snaps he took. You know, so it makes you wonder, like, you know, who's in control?
He just needed a little cowbell that game.
Right. And, you know, talking to some people in the organization, when we talk about, you know, protecting the player, one thing that what I've heard is that Max understands Max. And so when you're talking about protecting the player, what you're basically saying is you're telling me one thing, but I'm a little skeptical about it because pride's coming through, all of that's coming through. And so, therefore, we're going to protect you from you, and we respect that you want to be out there, and so we're going to sit you down as a result of that. The one prevailing thing about Max is he knows what he is capable of and dealing with and how to get out there and you know, get a game, even though he might be banged up. So there's confidence in the organization that if he tells us that he's, you know, if he's adamant about being ready to go, there's a good feeling within the organization that they don't have to protect him against him because he's smart enough. However, I am a little bit dubious about the play, about whether he's going to play on Sunday. And I say that because high ankle sprains are no joke.
Those are some serious. There's been athletes I've talked to who have suffered high ankle sprains that say it's better to break the ankle than suffer a high ankle sprain, just because of how long it takes to truly recuperate and get it back to a sustainable playing level.
Right. And so exactly. So I do wonder, even as much of a warrior as Max Crosby is, if he also understands, like, how many games am I potentially sacrificing down the road by pushing it right now versus how many games will I be in a better position to play, you know, moving forward if I, you know, if I don't play in this game, basically. If I preserve it here so that it gives me a better chance to play the balance of the season versus the reverse. So I'm a little just, you know, running back and hearing what he said yesterday, it's just, feels like he's, you know,
it's very uncertain.
It's up in the air.
It's very uncertain.
Yeah.
I know Max is a guy that prides himself on moments.
For sure.
And I know, you know, different players look at different games in different ways. Obviously, they all look to win. But you look at this matchup, right? A battle of arguably the top two edge rushers in the National Football League. You know, there's, even though they're not on the field at the same time, there's a level of, well, I know he's banged up too. I know Myles Garrett's dealing with stuff too. Obviously different. I know that doesn't matter.
And we have to qualify that because it is the high ankle sprains are tricky.
Yeah. So
and that, you can't look at it like that.
No,
you know what
and
I'm saying?
I know we're sitting here saying you can't look at it, but I know these athletes are wired different to where they sit there and say, no, you know what I mean? This is a game I need to be in. So that's gonna be the question over the next couple of days that Max is gonna have to with himself, with his coaches, and that's where, you know, that fine line of protecting the player, of the player being honest, and also long-term thinking. I mean, this isn't, you know, another guy. This is, you know, arguably the face of the franchise that you need to also kind of keep in check a little bit.
Let me ask you this. How, oh my gosh, against this Browns offense, if Max Crosby isn't out there even at 70%, how much does that concern you? Because when I look at this Cleveland Browns offense, I'm like, I mean, I think if there is a game where, you know, maybe you can protect him a little bit in this game by not playing him for the reasons that we just talked about, A, getting right, and B, being available for even more games down the road by not pushing it today. How much are you worried how little or much are you worried about the offense of the Cleveland Browns to say there's no chance for the Raiders if Max Crosby's not out there?
Well, when you ask the question, are you worried about the offense? Like
the
when you have a quarterback, Deshaun has the talent. I know he hasn't shown it in a bit, but we know the talent's there because of his of his past. Anytime you have a quarterback, I'm always gonna worry, right? Like you're always gonna have that kind of.
But as we saw, it feels even, like that's so much in theory. Right?
That's true. But to your point, and I get what you're getting at with the line,
with where they are right now.
When we went behind enemy lines on Thursday and talked to Mary Kay Cabot. You know, by the sound of it, again, we're not there, but sounds like they may be in as much disarray as we feel the Raiders are with their offensive line. So in terms of that opportunity, I would probably agree with you. I'd probably say, you know what, if our depth can't break through this, then, you know, then it's not an opponent issue at that point. It becomes an us issue.
Right.
And, you know, a 60, a 40% max, whatever you want to detail him, isn't worth the longer-term risk.
Right, because it could mean a 50% max next week.
Because that, again, just so everybody's clear, those high ankle sprains are, you know, it doesn't sound, he's got a high ankle sprain. Those are season derailing type things. It's similar to the hamstring. It needs time, and there's sometimes no set time. Usually, I know with a high ankle sprain, it's between 4 to 6 weeks till it's really right again. But that's if you're properly resting it and not, you know, doing more damage to it.
DeCamrion Richardson has a hamstring. He hasn't been able to practice yet this year in terms of the regular season.
And Raider fans know all about hamstring injuries. I mean, just look at Darren Waller.
Right.
I mean, you know, you look at a career that was essentially altered because his hamstrings couldn't get right.
Correct.
So, while the high ankle sprain is, that's
his left and his right.
So while the high ankle sprain is definitely, you know, something you got to keep an eye on, I'm curious. I'm curious what that looks like on Sunday. I would, as someone who wants to see kind of the moxie of this team, if Max can't go, obviously that's a huge blow. But I'd like to see how the defensive line responds.
Well,
I'd like to see Tyree Wilson be thrust into I'd like to see that.
Tyree?
Yeah.
Well, he has been. He just needs to start responding. And because he was thrown in there last week. And there's been times.
I mean without Max. I'm saying like you're the dude now. Mm. There's nobody else there.
Yeah.
Christian's on the inside, that's fine. But there's nobody else on the end. You're the guy now. Can you be the guy? I know I'm probably talking to both sides of my mouth now, you know, in the first month of the season, because I'm the one who said preach patience with the guy. But that was when Malcolm Kuntz was healthy, right. Max was healthy, and you had a vaunted defensive line that was raring to go.
The picture is different.
The picture's different now. It's go time, right? Like, you know, I know he needs reps and things like that, but we'll get more into Tyree in a second. I don't want to keep Thor from Summerlin waiting.
Go ahead, Thor.
Hey, what's up, y'all? It's game day weekend, man. I'm like a zombie today. I don't have my normal energy. I just got back from Oakland at 1 this morning for the last A's game. But it's Raider weekend, so I had to get out here. Man, we got to hold on to no matter what. There's NFL players out there. So whoever can go and can't go, the team needs to pick up the intensity. They need to – you get some young, hungry guys out there that might change things. You get Trey Tucker out there to get a lot more balls his way and get more action coming. And just the speed of the game could maybe change. Cleveland's offense is pure trash. Like they have a good defense. Okay, so do we. I expect a low-scoring battle. Mm-hmm. But let's find a way to win this game. And Max hopefully can go. If he can't, he can't. But whoever can go, get out there, leave everything out there. 2-2 is really huge right now for us. 1-3 starts looking rough. You start giving up. I'm still not giving up on the season. I feel like this team can turn it around offensively. The defense will get there. We got to start stopping the run a little better. Hey, but when injuries happen, it brings other people to light. So we might have that dude who's there who hasn't got enough playing time yet that comes to light. That's what I'm hoping for. That's what I'm hanging my hat on right now. Go Raiders.
That's great. Hey, Thor, what was that like, though, for that final game at the Coliseum?
It was incredible. I flew in Wednesday night, went out and tailgated Wednesday, and then I got there at 5 in the morning, still drunk from the night before.
Good man.
Lot, and we were out there all day. Caught a 10:30 flight back. Got back home about 1 in the morning, so I'm running on fumes right now, but Raider fans that I know are coming in starting the day, so we got to get back at it. It was incredible. The energy was great. I mean, it was a lot of anger out there, a lot of sadness, a lot of just great memories, man. People I haven't seen in years, and everyone I'm sure was the same. Incredible, incredible time, man. And we pulled off the win. We pulled off the win. It was great. So, hell yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for calling, Thor. Appreciate it.
Thor! Now, Thor may not have had the same gusto wielding that hammer as he normally does, but he still showed up. He still showed up on a Friday.
Yes.
Not 100%. He's still feeling the effects.
Get the juices flowing, though.
Of what we'll call an emotional week up in Oakland. He said he was tailgating. It's all we do here.
Why not?
On Raider Nation Radio. It's what we're doing right now. But, Thor, thank you. Thank you for showing up. We heard the lack 100% in your voice, but we appreciate you. You showed up anyways. And he's excited. He's excited despite everything that's happened. He's excited to see what team shows up, and I think that's the most telling part.
What's so important is who actually does show up, because there's the very real possibility that the Raiders are going to have their two best players, one on defense, one on offense, not on the field. I mean, as we sit here right now, that's a very concerning potential reality. If Devontae and Max Crosby can't go on Sunday, I'm not saying that they won't, but as we sit here right now, that is a possibility. So what's exciting about that is, to your point, Vince, hey, time for some other guys to step up. Who does that become if that becomes the case? If Devontae isn't out there, if Max Crosby isn't out there, who are the players that are going to step up to kind of save the day or step up and provide some relief in what would sound like a dire situation? It's funny because every Friday I do my Raiders Q&A, right? So I send out the call for questions, and it's just so fire this guy, fire that guy, da da da, all of this. Heads are starting to roll. If the season were to end today, the Raiders would be in the playoffs. I know it's only 3 games, you guys. I get that, and I understand it.
7th seed.
But that means that they're – how many teams are there in each conference?
It means that the season's not lost after 3 games.
How many teams are in each conference? What is it?
That'd be 16.
So there's 9 other teams, right? 9 other teams that are in their conference that are worse off than they are right now. So I get it that it doesn't look good. 1-2 doesn't look good. Certainly what happened on Sunday against the Panthers doesn't look good. But there is perspective that's needed. And there's a lot of teams right now that are trying to figure out who the hell they are, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are. There's a lot of teams that are dealing with injuries. There's a lot of teams that are just dealing with, we're not quite sure who we are. We haven't been able to hit on all cylinders. We don't know what kind of, what our true identity is. The Raiders among them. But if you want to put it in perspective, in spite of that, they're not in the worst case situation right now. They would make the playoffs. And I know there's a long way to go, but that also tells you there's plenty of time even for the Raiders to find out who they are, to find out what they can hang their hat on, to find out what their strengths are and maybe what their weaknesses truly are as well. So before everyone starts jumping out of windows, think about that for a second. There's a long way to go in this season.
All right, coming up next, we'll give you a chance to win these tickets to go see Ron White over at the Cosmo Chelsea Theater next Friday night, October 4th, 702-365-9200. Be caller number 9. You get hooked up with Tater Salad. Ron White over at the Cosmo. It's Raider Nation Radio.
I'm coming.
Back to the Morning Tailgate with Vinny, Vince, and Clay on Raider Nation Radio.
Wrapping up hour number one. Whoa, where am I going?
It's over.
Show's not over. The show is not over. Wrapping up hour number one here on the Morning Tailgate. Vinny, Vince, and Clay. Big night tonight over at the Fortress T-Mobile Arena. The Golden Knights playing host to the first time the Utah Hockey Club. Weird.
Welcome. Right.
Formerly the Arizona Coyotes. Right. UHC, as Clay likes to call them. Member of the UHC.
sounds like a what do we say, the a healthcare
Medicare
provider. If you're over 55, USC.
Contact your local UHC.
We're Tom Selleck doing the commercial.
Yeah. So Utah Hockey Club, again, a new franchise in the National Hockey League. The players are still the same that comprise the Arizona Coyotes, but obviously the preseason has gotten going. They had their first hockey game, the Utah Hockey Club. And, you know, there's going to be trivia questions. There's a trivia question for the Golden Knights. You know, what was their first ever game? It wasn't the regular season. The first ever game was a preseason game against the Vancouver Canucks. They won 9-4. Tyler Wong with a hat trick.
Hey, Tyler.
In a game where everything was right, Wong was right. And that was the headline that night. I'll never forget when I did those highlights.
That is magic right there. That is magic.
Yeah, it sounds terrible now, a few years later. But what was the first goal scored at the Utah Hockey Club? You may ask. Well, we've got your answer.
And now down to the corner for Kellerman. That got away from Dylan Gunther, and he's got to hurry up and get this puck. The net is empty, and it trickles in. A fluky goal against Utah. St. Louis will make it 2-0 on a strange wobbling puck all the way down. It is preseason game number one, and we already have things that you hardly ever see.
Way to go, UHC.
First of all, fantastic just tone in that call. Just like, what is... So for full context, Utah's playing St. Louis. St. Louis is up 1-0 at the end of the game. Utah pulls their goalie, trying to tie the game. And, you know, normally an empty net goal is not a big deal when the other team scores it. However, the Utah Hockey Club, Dylan Gunther, the puck goes off his stick and backwards into his own net. So when we look back at the first goal ever scored for the Utah Hockey Club, Utah scored it on their own net.
Well, yeah. Fortunately for Utah, that's never going to be in any record book or any recollection.
Preseason number one. That is not true. I will never forget it now.
Who scored the first goal for the Golden Knights in their preseason? Yeah, you don't know.
Tyler Wong.
Oh.
Tyler Wong.
We just brought it up. Oh. Had a hat trick. See?
Well, he had a hat trick. Okay, I'll give you that.
But you know, it's always going to be worth a beer at the bar.
There you go.
In Utah, it'll be, you know, a 1% beer. You may need four to actually equate it. But it's like a delayed penalty. The goalie leaves to the bench, and that thing is wide open. And it is so classic that happens to be the auspicious beginning of your franchise.
Some things just write themselves. That's just, and the tone of that call is just so perfect. Just like,
so they're playing.
Come on!
They're going to play in the Jazz Arena, right?
Yes.
Are they building a new arena or?
Eventually, yes. The short answer is eventually yes. Right now, they are going to be refurbishing and upgrading
the Salt Palace.
Does that exist anymore? The Salt Palace?
I'll call it that forever.
I don't think that exists anymore. I believe it's Vivint.
Like the building itself, or just the name?
Well, the Salt Palace Arena, Salt Palace will always live on.
That arena, I'm saying the arena.
I don't know if it's the same. I don't know if it's the same arena or not. It might be.
Pretty sure it is.
Might be. Definitely not called Salt Palace anymore, even though that's a fantastic name.
Absolutely.
It's a fantastic name. But yes, they are upgrading the current arena to outfit, because right now when you, because the Golden Knights did play there in a preseason game a couple seasons ago against the LA Kings as part of the preseason face-off. They used to hold the games in Vegas, but it became a home game, so they wanted a neutral site, so they went to Salt Lake. And the issue with that was the sight lines for the TV was poor for hockey because of the configuration, as well as for the fans. So I believe the number, without looking it up at this exact moment, is about 16,000 that it can hold. However, a little more than 4,000 have some sort of obstructed viewing.
Hmm. Okay.
So either there's a pillar or there's something not too dissimilar to if you go to Hyde Lounge up at T-Mobile Arena, that is obstructed viewing because of how it protrudes out. You literally would have to be on the edge looking down to see the full arena, and even then you wouldn't be able to see the corner. So they are upgrading it so that the new number is less than 1,000 or something.
Oh, you got to, because that could be somebody's first time seeing hockey, and next thing you know, you got an obstructed view. and your experience is considerably dwindled.
Yeah, you know, just thinking about how the advent of naming rights for these arenas and stadiums, which I get, obviously, that's revenue for the teams, and theoretically that goes back into your team, and you can buy a new defenseman or a goalie or whatever the case is. But man, something gets lost, because I just remember growing up with McNichols Arena, Market Square Arena, mm-hmm. the Hemisphere over in San Antonio, on and on and on. There were the Salt Palace. There were some great names that got that fell by the wayside. That's why I respect Madison Square Garden. It's still Madison Square Garden. There's no naming rights. And way back in the day, believe it or not, I was working for the Lakers when that first thing came around. It was the Forum. Remember, it was the fabulous yep. Forum for yep. years and years that the Lakers won so many championships with. And then they changed it to the Great Western Forum. It was after a bank in Southern California. And we're having dinner.
And
you know,
that went over well.
We're having dinner. We're having dinner pregame the day that deal got announced, right? So yep. later on that night, it was going to be – it literally changed over middle of the day, right? And so you know this pregame meal in the press room, right? Chick Hearn, the Lakers' mm-hmm. great announcer, who I would sit next to. That was my job. I would feed him stats and, you know, notes and things like that. And he's swearing up and down – as we're eating dinner, I'm never calling it anything but the fabulous Forum. There's no way you're going to hear the words, you know, Great Western Forum coming out of my mouth. I will never do it. I'm dead set against it. The heck with that. I kid you not. The opening of the game, live from the Great Western Forum.
You got
Chick
to.
Hearn. Yeah, I'm like, oh, sure. You really talk. I love Chick, but you talked a big game in there. But when it got right down to it. Who's paying you there, brother?
You need to make sure that check clears. And it's same with Staples Center, crypto. Yeah. Like,
it's always going to be Staples.
It's always going to be Staples.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, Clay.
Yeah.
Poor Utah.
Poor Utah.
Watch, they're going to come in and just run roughshod on
imagine?
Inside the fortress.
Right, and that'll be the only game they remember. They'll never remember game one 4 days ago.
I'll never forget it. I will never forget it. That's rough stuff. Rough stuff. But hey. Hockey's a weird sport, just getting underway. And we are just getting underway here on the Morning Tailgate, hour number two on the way.